Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We have the lawn man out here who's doing his thing.
Oh, it's a fine day.
Yes, it's storm. Friday, May the 10th. It's going to storm.
I said, at least we don't have a storm. Oh, we did that for a whole week.
Yeah.
Nice to see sunshine.
This is the last word. Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. Boy, oh boy, we got something to play for you people later. I'm telling you. But we're waiting until Reverend Eddie.
A guest to share it with. Because it's a really, really, really spectacular
I'm telling you. Unbelievable. And then, what was the other thing which we were going to talk about? We got so much to talk about today. There's so much going on. There was something that they were saying a little while ago before we left it. What was the last thing they were talking about? They were talking about it came right after the National Policy Institute. They were talking about Missouri. You hear what Missouri did?
What now?
Missouri. Are these people completely fracking crazy?
Hey, we're joining the party now. You realize that? We're jumping right in on the fracking.
Coming
to North Carolina.
Oh, unbelievable.
So,
what have the Missouri
fracking people of Missouri gotten into now?
They passed. You can carry a gun with you if you're going in the booth to get your prayers forgiven by the priest. You can.
You might accidentally tell him something that he doesn't need to hear.
Yeah, but
then you have to just take care.
Suppose he's carrying a gun, and he says, "I can't figure you. I just got to kill you." Bam!
It's a shootout at the OK confessional.
It's a shootout at the confessional. The OK confessional. They now pass a law that if you are a teacher and you don't carry a gun from school, come to school with a gun, you're fired.
Hey, this is a new Republican. You know, they don't want big government.
Of course
not. That's the evil.
But this is the law they just passed.
That's the evil. We've always had this conversation. We need less government.
They're making you do it.
Government.
Yeah.
So now they're going to
demand
you arm yourself at all times.
Or
get fired.
Or get fired.
You got to love big government. It's only useful if you're in bed. Or
you better have that gun under your pillow.
Because
they come in there and find out that you ain't got a gun under your pillow, or you ain't strapping it inside under the sheets. Forget it. Because they're allowed to look under the sheets and see what's under there. You better have a sword or shotgun or a long rifle.
You know, this does remind me of that favorite story I have of old Governor Bush in Texas.
But I won't
get into his passing laws to arm everybody while simultaneously passing laws to make sex toys illegal. But let's just move right along.
Right?
We don't want to get back into that.
Now, why would you want to make that illegal?
Well, you know, you can only kill people. You can't pleasure people.
Ah.
And by the way, I saw this on Facebook the other day. That was a funny little post someone had. Quoting someone who I can't remember, so I won't say who it is. But it was a quote from a guy that said, hey, if guns don't kill people, people kill people, you know, that whole statement. Well, if guns don't kill people, why do you need a gun?
That's right. Why do you need a gun if you're not going to kill somebody with it?
No, but, you know, if that's their slogan all the time, hey, guns don't kill people. Well, yeah, they do. If they didn't kill people, you wouldn't need one to go kill someone.
That's right. If you got a gun, kill somebody. Have you killed somebody today?
Yeah, really.
That's the question. Have you killed
somebody? So now we're going to maybe we can model that for the United States, have this Missouri law become national. Arm everybody or you're fired. If you don't have a gun, you can't work in America.
I really got to get that. Hold on.
Well, you know, Mike, I think that you're talking about all this stuff that we're talking about today just because you're trying to deflect attention off of Obama, Hillary Clinton, and the horror that is Benghazi Gate. You know, I don't understand why we keep having to talk about this, but I saw on Fox News the other day, they were comparing this to Watergate, and they said this is Obama's downfall, Benghazi gate. I'm just trying to remember a day. Pick any day, but remember a day out of the 8 years that Bush was in office that didn't have a gate. You know, when they weren't waterboarding someone or giving illegal no-bid contracts out to their own friends and family, you know, starting wars. I don't know. There was an endless supply of news. But no, we're not talking about Benghazi gate. We are not. Even though there's a fact that you need to know, Mike. True fact. Did you know that more of our soldiers died electrocuted in showers than in Benghazi during the attack? But we don't need to get into the details about that. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but you want to talk about the ongoing horrors in Bangladesh? You feel like talking about that? So Bangladesh, and I don't know if y'all heard this yesterday, but this is the shining light of this horrible, horrible story. So this ongoing disaster upon disaster that they've been having. So first they had a mega complex collapsed, and they've killed over 1,000 people, I think, now they've found the bodies of, because of this huge garment factory complex that collapsed all the workers. Now, that was bad enough. They're still digging out of that. But then shortly after that, the other day, they had another fire at another factory. Killed a lot of other people. Okay. New fire only killed 8, but still, you're just, again, there's no safety. There's no oversight.
900,000 people, I mean.
No, it's 1,000. I think it was 912 last week. I don't know what it is this week. I think they got up to 1,000, but I'm not sure. But about 1,000 people died in the collapse alone.
Unbelievable.
But the good news that I was going to share with you.
Good news, okay.
Yesterday, they found a woman.
Yes.
Trapped. Yeah. In the rubble.
Was she 17 days, right?
17 days. She's
without
still alive.
Food or water.
Still alive. This woman has the most miraculous story ever. I was so impressed by that. I mean, you talk about the sheer will to live to last 17 days crushed in rubble without
you
anything.
You think Rush Limbaugh could last 17 days? He's got a lot of fat over.
You know what?
Those walruses, don't
if
they?
He didn't,
they don't
if
have
you, if you didn't give him 17 Oxycontin, I think he'd probably pass it.
You're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
But, so, the thing is about this story in Bangladesh, okay? Congratulations to the young lady. Thank God she was found.
Uh-huh.
But the overall problem remains. It's across all of our markets, everywhere, especially throughout the Pacific Rim. You know, there was a few years ago under Bush, there was the horror seeped out about these garment factories and work camps and
right.
stuff that we had on several islands. You remember that. They had people chained up, had people locked in bunkers with no way out, all this kind of stuff. Well, they keep, you know, just moving it, shifting it. Every time they get caught somewhere, they move across the border to the next place, you know. Now we've been going into Vietnam, Burma, you know, all these places. We're opening up these markets. Bangladesh is one. But again, if we don't have enforcement of international laws and basic human rights and worker rights, we're going to see this over and over and over. We've seen it for decades now. But this isn't new. This is the dark side of capitalism, which is all profit and no responsibility, no accountability at all. Just do anything you can to make a buck. And to think that you kill 1,000 people so that you can, you know, go pick up a $7.99 T-shirt, you know, at wherever Mart.
But you
not,
see,
it's not
but see, here's the problem we have. We're not going to stop the drugs. Because we want them.
Well, that's the thing.
Everybody we want the drugs. That's why.
Well, everybody wants the cheapest possible product.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants the drugs. Everybody wants the cool food from overseas, everything else, but they don't want to pay for anything.
Mm-hmm.
They just all want it for free.
Yep.
But you know what? Life ain't free. And life is supposed to be precious. And if you just go for the bargain basement, lowest common, you know, denominator, make everybody live in a ditch and work until they drop dead, you're gonna just have these horror stories every single day. And we've got to be responsible. We can make a profit, but we don't have to kill 1,000 people while they sew our, you know, cheap shirts together. It's not good.
Well, I was going to tell my story about my. Finish telling my story with my sciatica.
Oh, you've got your phone.
This is the first day, ladies and gentlemen, I have walked. Well, I did use the cane a little bit this morning. First day I walked without a cane. I was using a walker up until yesterday.
Yeah. So
I'm telling you.
And just for the record, you've had sciatica, but you've had this terrible attack the last couple of weeks.
Ooh.
And
out of the blue, don't know what's wrong. And then let me tell you something, how these insurance companies, I got a call from, I had to get the lumbar epidural last week.
Right.
Where he took a needle and stuck it in my back and, oh, well, anyway, that didn't hurt? Tell you?
Well,
I don't know if it was the
relative
pain.
Relative to your...
Well, maybe. But anyway, the thing was that it was unbelievable because I had left Ortho Carolina. Ortho Carolina was the first place my doctor sent me.
Okay.
They have to do things by the book. You know, I got a call for them today that they got the okay for me to get the epidural. Do you know when I went to them? In February. So I was supposed to wait all the time? Are these people out of their minds? I said, epidural? I said, I've had 8 before in the last 2 weeks before you got here. I said, forget it. I'm not going to talk about you when I'm on the air, too. That is the worst bunch of know-nothings over there. The insurance companies, which control Ortho Carolina, are killing the business. They are killing their business.
Well, yeah, and they may be killing the patient.
The problem is
endless, you know, we're talking about profitability of things and, you know, affecting people in Bangladesh. But the same thing here. When you put profit first, and it's all about shuffling paperwork and crunching numbers and doing all this, and somewhere in that equation you've completely forgotten and lost the people, this is what happens. You know, you're getting the okay to have a procedure from February now. And what's the date again, everybody?
To tell you.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So the thing is that when I was
Here's the solution for my this new single thing. Just heard about it.
Surgery.
Latest thing just came out.
Like
yoga.
Yeah, right. Yoga's really
yoga.
Good. Yeah.
Because you know, it's only been around for about 10,000 years.
Only yoga I'm gonna do is
it has great results, and you don't have to go under the knife and do all that, because my theory is when you start messing with nerves.
You got some hell of a nerve.
Permanent damage. No?
Yeah. Hey, that's why I'm not doing it.
Cut, snips, scrapes, or anything else.
And,
like,
geez,
you know,
an orthopedic surgeon. Now, what does that think he does well? You don't have that surgeon in there.
You don't say surgery unless that's what you want to do.
Yeah, right. So forget that. There was no way I was going to have this guy take my... operate or anything on me.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have to get on a next week after sometime, get a some alternative help on here and see if we can get a yoga expert or somebody on, tell you some techniques to help you out.
But
for everybody else who doesn't have time to wait from February until now to be seen by someone.
This is May, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, we've already, winter has ended. We are springing forward and racing towards summer, and they're getting around to shuffling paperwork.
Unbelievable.
But here's the thing, Mike.
Now, but the only thing is stay off my feet, which I haven't done today, and I'm starting to feel it in my left foot already.
But here's the thing that we talked about before. You have paperwork to shuffle because you have insurance. You have great coverage. You know, you work for the government.
Right.
You've been in the military. You've done all these things in the past that allow you to have the cream of the crop in coverage. Okay? You're having this much difficulty having to leap, you know, a tall building.
Unbelievable.
In your underwear with the S on the front.
Ain't that
because
true?
You've got complete coverage. Imagine what it's like for these poor working people who have incomplete coverage, no coverage,
that's right,
partial coverage from some work or something. Imagine the hurdles they have to go through. This is insane. So what's wrong with our system? Why is it broken?
Our system is broken because
greed. Yes, greed. And we have these little fixes out there, but they're minor, like Obamacare. And they're still fighting.
As Gordon Deppler said, greed is good.
Today, they were still on NPR talking about how they are trying desperately to stop at the last minute somehow Obamacare. The implementation of it, the
unbelievable,
all kind of stuff.
Supreme Court passed it. Constitutional.
It's all, yep.
But you see, they know they can't stop it. The only problem
they're worried about, see, is that it's finally kicking in.
And people that say, those guys were lying to us all this time. They were lying to us. Yes, they are lying to you, stupid, out there, who's going along with that fool grinning McCrory. You know, McCrory reminds me of
uh-oh,
the Joker.
Uh-oh. Are we getting on to?
He reminds me of the Joker.
Duke McCrory.
That's right. Duke McCrory.
So,
yeah, he's
here's
another
an interesting thing.
Yeah.
For all of you that don't know this, we jump between, if you haven't noticed, international, national, and local news.
Well, isn't it what we call a global conspiracy? Aren't they saying it's the globalists? It's the globalists that want to take over? Globalists?
So to jump over here real quick to get local, since we're talking about your local and you brought up our Duke. Everybody may not know this around the country, but we just had a slamming into the wall event. We lost our state.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a governor, a House, and a Senate now controlled by Republicans for the first time in how many?
125 years.
125 years. 125 years. So guess what? We are in trouble. They've been racing. I mean, not even sleeping, spending every waking moment trying to ram crazy, horrific legislation.
Ain't that the truth?
They tried to make us a Southern Baptist Christian-only state with an official religion. They have cut workers' benefits in half. They tried to dissolve all the judgeships. They tried to dissolve all the boards across the state, all the environmental panels and committees. What all else have they done? What was the other latest, greatest thing they've been after our GOP operatives here?
Oh, they want to take the revoke the tax credit for any student who lives in another state and is voting in this state. They want to take the tax credit away from the parents. Now, this is illegal because they can't take a tax credit from somebody who's going to someplace else. That's absolutely ludicrous. But they're saying it because why? Because the Tea Party people are stupid.
Yeah.
They're thinking you're stupid.
Well, and they also, so I heard about this. This was just unbelievable. But they are trying to undo because, you know, I guess a Democratic governor did it. But you remember Bev Perdue, one of her great successes was she went a long way toward getting us set up as Hollywood East. She arranged a whole tax credit plan, all this stuff to lure businesses here. And guess what? It worked. We started getting shows here. We've got things like, what's here local? Homeland. Is that the one that's filmed here in town?
Homeland
here. We got the biggest blockbuster of the entire, you know, last decade, Hunger Games. That whole thing was filmed here. All of these movies, TV shows, everything started coming here. They also just up in Wilmington. They're actively building Hollywood East right now. They're destroying an entire mall and converting it into one of the largest
studios.
It's a mall. Now, well, they got one up in Wilmington they're building. It's going to be the largest one outside of Hollywood. Massive studios. You know, going great guns. this week they revealed they're going to undo all the tax credits. They're going to sunset all of it, tear it all down, because they said they don't want that liberal culture creeping in here. You know, we don't want that Hollywoodness rubbing off on North Carolina.
Okay.
Yep. So this is the type of thing that we are, and we're just barely a season into them taking power. You know, this is just the spring. But they have
been in power 4 months.
It's been an unrelenting
only
war
been in power 4 months.
War.
I mean, it's just like it's completely, absolutely unbelievable.
Well, there was a thing I read last week. It was last week's. Y'all may get this in your town too, but we have this. It's a national thing, but they do it individual per city. But we have a alternative press thing here called Creative Living. And Creative Living in Charlotte, last week's edition, they had a really nice article by Aaron Tracy Blackwood.
Yeah.
And it was talking about the GOP's war on the poor. But the title of it was "The Children Suffer Most Under North Carolina's War on the Poor."
Mm-hmm.
And it went through and talked about what they're doing, because they are just passed, for instance, you know, pay for drug tests. Did you hear about this?
Pay for drug tests.
So what they're doing is, if you're poor, you're obviously a criminal, because if you weren't a criminal, you would be poor, something like that. That's their logic. So if you are applying for food stamps in North Carolina,
yes,
or any kind of assistance for your children, any kind of, early school, all that kind of stuff, mandatory drug tests to get assistance, and you have to pay.
Yay, huh? If you got to get a drug test, and you are going to pay for it.
If you're too poor to feed your family,
you don't get a job then.
pay to go have a drug test. You know, that's what it's like. Look, the operative word was poor. We couldn't even feed ourselves, and yet you're going to charge us for a drug test so that we can get money to pay.
If you are poor, you can't get a job.
Now, this is on top of course, their crown jewel is, of course, that they are trying to change the voter ID laws here. They're putting in mandatory, you know, you must go and get 15 IDs and have your grandmother's corpse dragging behind you so that they can verify that you with DNA or something. Yeah, I don't know what all the requirements are.
I don't know that, sonny boy.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. But they're trying everything they can. They also just restricted the times for voting. They've done away with most of all the times that they used to give us.
Oh, right.
Early voting is gone now. They restricted the locations.
Yeah, they're
doing everything they can, basically.
They get rid of 1 week's worth of.
Yep. They're making it harder
early vote
instead of easier to vote.
Here's the problem we have. We need to look all past all this, because none of that is going to pass the court. So this is only a flace. They had to, you know, the thing is that when you go up to hit the ball, you can't just sit on a curveball. Because every time that pitcher is going to throw that fastball, and you'll be out in three strikes. So they're sitting there. They're saying, look, we're going to go up there, swing at anything. That's what they're doing.
Right.
They're swinging at anything because they know, as I spoke with Senator Malcolm Graham yesterday, I said, these regressive party members know that their time is up. That we don't have to have one single person come over the line from Mexico, hop over the fence, or do whatever, dig a tunnel and come here. You could shut every single one of them out where nobody ever gets across from Canada, New York side, California side, Mexico. They don't get across.
You can close the port.
And it is still, they are going to lose the vote, the populist vote, because by another 4 to 6 years, the supposedly illegal aliens that are here that have children will be turning 18.
And
it's too late. They should have shut that door 20 years ago.
Well, they shouldn't open the door. Well.
They shouldn't open the door 20 years ago. That's right.
But this is look, it's the truth of demographics. You know, science is always a pain, and they don't like to.
They
say science doesn't exist, but it does. And there's this little thing about numbers online. And when you add up all the minorities that you've been kicking in the corner and locking in the backyard and shutting away inside the detention facility and everything else you can think of, every corner of this country, when you add them all up, there's an unmistakable truth, and it's called we outnumber you. And so, again, like I said, if you didn't have another immigrant come from, you know, Bosnia,
ever,
and you didn't have anybody arrive from Costa Rica, and you didn't have another Filipino come in, you know, it doesn't matter. There's already more of a, well, they're not going to be minorities anymore. But
they will be the majority.
The only thing keeping them technically minorities is that they individually are minorities, but collectively they're a majority. But this is the writing on the wall that the GOP see, and then they go flip out. And their answer is, we need a national policy. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
A national policy.
Instance.
That's what we need.
Yeah.
A national policy.
Sounds like a bunker in Montana. But
a
I'm just
bunker in Montana.
Just talking. But now look. They know this is all illegal. Sarah Preston, the ACLU of North Carolina lady,
mm-hmm.
She even said about this work first junk that they come up with. She said, forcing people in need to pay up front for an invasive test without any suspicion of criminal activity or drug use would be cruel, costly, and blatantly unconstitutional. They've already had this overturned in 14 states?
Yep.
They just lost in Florida. Recently, I mean, this is dead in the water. But again, what they're doing is throwing everything
they can against the wall.
On the wall, just hoping something will stick. And even if it doesn't, it's just a big, basically, let's just be blunt, it's a big shitstorm. And it's just a last gasp of a dying party.
Well, I heard one of them say today that they thought that Hillary Clinton was really Osama bin Laden.
Doors.
So therefore, they are they're even throwing anything like that out.
Yeah.
You know, she's not what she pretends to be.
Yeah.
She is really the Antichrist. It was not Obama. He was a distraction.
That was just Damien, her son.
Oh, I mean, this is the Antichrist. He's the Antichrist. This communist, socialist, bureaucrat. What the market's going up 15 million? What were we talking about? What?
Did you ever see that the other day when they had that, the market, when it topped 15,000 on the stock market? It had a picture of Obama standing there with the stock market going all the way up, had the top score 15.5 or whatever it is. And it says, that's right, Obama, the worst socialist ever. It's like, hey, socialism, you're doing it wrong.
Well, but here's the thing that's so bad about it. When you get them on the big on television, on the radio, you ask them, well, the country's doing really well. No, the country is doing horrible. We're down to the dumps. We're not making. If I was president, we'd be at 30 billion, 30 million now. What are you talking about?
Well, this is the truth. If they weren't dragging their feet in every way possible. Because, you know, when he went in, he did things like, hey, let's put high-speed rail coast to coast. Let's go. And they refused to fund it now for, you know, 6 years. If they weren't doing everything they could to stop growth, we would be sitting on top of the Mount Everest of economic booms right now.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're just on the, Rocky Mountains of economic booms. I mean, we've already made history. But even so, it's far slower than it should be. But this is with them trying to do everything possible, you know, because what they would love is to somehow smear him with, because you remember they even called the collapse of the economy right after he went in, Obama's, this is Obama's disaster, you know, as if Bush weren't, you know.
I am so sick and tired to hear about this big on Benghazi gate.
Well, see, that's just
these
all
people are so screwed up.
They've been waiting for years. They have nothing on Obama at all. And Benghazi, to be honest, they've given up on getting anything Obama. He's too clean. and he's not going to run again. So they're not worried about it. So now they turn toward Hillary. And this is just that.
Well, she was at fault.
Not a kneecap.
Here's the thing. We had a contingent in Tripoli. They said, well, why didn't they send them troops down here? Like, all these guys are generals. Or McCain has never a general. He never led anybody. He was a follower in the military. Don't talk about what McCain wants. He's a moron. And so is that Lindsey Graham. He was just another grunt in the military. He didn't have any leadership qualities, or else he wouldn't have sank the Dagger on almost sank the other ship he was on. But that's why I digress. The commanders on the ground and the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, do not take those troops out of Libya, out of Tripoli,
right.
Because that's the main headquarters. And this was just a dinky outpost. CIA run.
Now listen,
and they don't want to say that.
That's a couple of things. This is what bothers me greatly, and I think it hampers this entire discussion. The GOP played this great game on two fronts. One, not to put too fine a point on it, operating always in the black, and I mean not as in monetarily, fiscally sound. I'm talking about in the unseen dark world of CIA, you know, NSA, secret mercenary armies, you know, Blackwater, all of that murkiness always leads us into illegal human rights violations, indefensible positions, because there's no oversight.
Right.
There's no technical rules of war and engagement or anything else, and it always leads to these kinds of situations. You know, when we have these weird things happening, like we do cross-border runs into Pakistan, and it creates an international episode because we blow up a wedding instead.
Right.
But then we can't ever talk about it because it wasn't really happening. You know,
it's not really a war.
This whole Benghazi thing, all that, again, this is a black kind of site, and it had other things happening, and it couldn't be responded to like a normal site, and all this other junk. Okay, so that confuses the whole issue to begin with, and I get very angry about it because not only is it just operating in the dark, I don't like when things aren't transparent and you just don't know what's going on for real, but they also have this really strong record of, we'll call it coincidence, that wherever they are operating with these secret sites and these secret CIA armies in these secret destabilization programs where they go into, you know, dictatorial or whatever regimes that we don't like and they take them down from the inside. There's always, you know, they've gotten really good at creating terrorists and discord inside other countries. But sometimes that's that little phrase called blowback. It comes back. We created Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan to take out the Soviet Union, to make their occupation rough. And then it came back on us, right? And again, here we go with something. Here's Al-Qaeda again. Isn't it weird that every time we have a black site or a black operation going on, Al-Qaeda somehow pops up and knows where we are? You know, Al-Qaeda always has the ability to go back into our green zones or whatever and cause damage because we are paying, training, and arming them. They know where we operate. They know where our secret sites are, and they know how to get to them. Because you remember this, the thing was, he went into the safe room, and then they went knew exactly where it was and went and burned him out and killed him in it. So average Joe, you know, poor child in the streets of Ethiopia, and the one that was starving in the Sudan, and the one that crawled out of the sewers in Alexandria and Egypt and other, they didn't know anything about these operations. But suddenly this group did. Ain't that a coincidence?
I wonder how that happened.
And then you get the Republicans who, of course, they like to play this game. If you run all these black sites, run these black operations, create these fiascos, and then turn around and blame the other people, just like we did with the other war, the entire both wars, actually.
Right.
We've pretended that it's legitimate and it's after the fact, and then if there's any problems, that it's a Democratic problem.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, we have a caller on the phone. And who is this, I'd ask? Who's on the phone? Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Robbie, Dr. Robbie
yes.
Akiri?
This is Robbie Akiri. Mr. Mike Lawson, I am so proud that you answered for me. It's always a pleasure to call into your show.
Well, I'm glad we had the chance to hear you again. How
oh.
is so what going on now with
Can
the 12th your 12th district run as
call.
Chair of the 12th district?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I was at a meeting this morning with some powerful Democrats who all have pledged their support, the senior Democrats. I am running for chair of Congressional District 12, and that covers 6 counties from Mecklenburg all the way up through Davidson County. Slices of Davidson, slices of Cabarrus, slice of Rowan. As you very well know, Mike, this last group did surgery on our districts.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're going to work with what we have. And I am the second vice chair of District 12. I've been involved with the district since 2008. And I believe that now that the chair is stepping down, she's the new mayor of High Point, it gives me a chance to move in and put us in a stronger direction for not only 2013, but from 2014 to 2016.
Mm-hmm. Not left, that's very good. And I understand, as I was just told this afternoon, that Union County, well, they're having a heck of a time in Union County. I mean, everybody wants to be a boss. You know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. So, that's how it is over there.
Well, Mike, if you want to die, you go to Union County, I guess.
Correct. That's about it. But they got some. I mean, we're going to be talking about a group that is out in Montana now, later on in the show, but it's called the National Policy Institute. And they must have a couple of chapters in Union County.
it's
unbelievable.
I think Union County, is that District 8?
I think a portion of it might be District 8. No.
Yeah.
It used to be, but when they changed across to the line, so I don't believe District 8, yes, there is, no, that's right, because a friend of mine who lives there across the street, she's District 9, and across the street is District 8.
Yes, I think so, yes. And as you very well know, sir, as an elected official in District 8 as the first vice chair, you know how very contentious these things can be. But we have a chance in District 12 not only to elect me, of course, I'm everything willing to be the chair, but the next chair will have a lot to do with who gets to be the representative for District 12 to the Congress, because Congressman Mel Watt is moving to higher ground.
Right, that'd be.
And as I said, I know you are new. You've newly moved in, or they moved you into District 12. I hope that you will play a critical role with us. I've worked starting Veterans Hall Obama, and you were one of our key members in that group from 08 all the way up through now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And what is the thing that you want to get done when you become the chair?
Thing I want to do is to have, within 90 days, have a meeting of all elected people from the District 12. That's from Mecklenburg all the way up through Davidson. And these are people who have been involved with their counties. This is an effort to show we are one district. We may be separate counties, but we are one district. And we want to put together a town hall with a series of forums covering the district so that people are up to date on issues such as health care, on issues as in June we will be hit with unemployment, what's happening in Raleigh, which affects the district. As I said to you yesterday, I stood with Congressman Bob Etheridge at a press conference on standing for public school education. So as an educator myself, that is one of our main things. You know, Mike, we have several universities in District 12.
Right.
We probably have one of the largest concentration of historically black colleges and universities in District 12, and those universities have not had a voice. We have a high percentage of veterans, and we want to look at how we can enhance small businesses in District 12 so that the next Congress person will hear our voices. And that's really the role of the district, is to lift up those issues that and get people to, as I said yesterday, participate and persevere. So I have a big platform in front of me, but with the right board members, and I will be appointing subcommittees, we can do it.
Yeah. You need the right people in there that are going to buy into the agenda and offer alternatives to a plan that comes up if they, you know, because you don't need anybody meek, but you need someone who's going to have someone who's going to offer a plan that maybe you didn't think of or an idea that you didn't think of, because you can't, no matter who you are, you can't think of everything.
That's exactly right. And as I asked you yesterday, I know I may have put you on the spot in front of all your listeners, that you will play a role in helping me go through our first 90 days and working with the district, because you have a lot of experiences. I know that. Anyone listening and who've met you, and you headed up the African American Caucus throughout the state, and that kind of experience needs to be brought to our district.
Well, I will. I'll be there wherever you need me for. No problem, Thomas.
Yes.
I was going to echo what she said earlier and commend her on it, because I think it's, especially after we've gone through our years of Kissling, it is so important to listen to the people and give them their voice power, you know, give their message up the ranks instead of just always coming down and telling people what you're going to do. I think that's absolutely commendable, and I'm glad to hear you say it.
Oh, who am I speaking? Who am I listening to?
That's Thomas.
This is Thomas Fortenberry.
My senior producer.
Oh, Thomas Fortenberry. Thank you.
You know, you've met Thomas before.
Yes, of course. Yeah. That's right. And thank you, because that's exactly right. People in the district have a lot. You know, we have over 700,000, 750,000 people, and their voices are powerful. They not only elect the president, but they elect the congressperson, and there are many elected officials. So it's getting the people's voices. That's what I've always been about. And Mike knows that. If not, he wouldn't have invited me back today.
Definitely. No, it's just so important, though, to have people. You know, the apathy isn't just people not caring. It's people not caring because they've been ignored so long, they've given up. Empower people and say, hey, we are listening, and your voice does matter, and we're listening. You know, you've got a solution. I'm taking it and doing something with it. You know, thank you. That's the whole key.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who say that, oh, you know, we're Democrats, too, and he won't invite us on the show, and he won't ask anything. He's just, you know, he just plays that New York thing. He's just too good. I said, yes, that's right. I don't want you on my show. I don't care if you are a Democrat. I don't have to have you on my show. You don't like that? That's too bad. I said, but, you know, I'm going to have people on the show who I think are doing something good for the constituents. If they're not doing any good for the constituents, they ain't going to get no time for me unless it's an open-handed slap to the face.
Some people think this is back to that privileged place.
Right, right.
Some people think politics is about them, not
and you know, I have been told by a lot of people, "Oh, you got to give that person a chance." I said, "No, I give them one shot at me. When they make that one mistake, that's it's over. Don't come back again." I'm closing the bar car, the car, the bar car door closed.
That's right.
All you got to do to be invited forever onto our show is do something. You know, prove your worth. Don't go about you every single
day.
Well, then I know I'll have a space because yeah. I have been really working hard, and I'm seeing some of the results. But what you both are saying is true. We have what we have in Raleigh because the people believe that their leaders would lead them right, and they didn't.
No, right. They're right. Please, I know that. Please, please. Over the last amount of years, it's since 1995 when I was first elected chair of the African American Caucus. After I was told they had 100 counties.
Wow!
It was the biggest lie ever perpetrated, and you see. They could have told anybody that because most people wouldn't have went to 100 counties. But after I visited 40 counties and found out that only 5 existed, I said, somebody's lying to me.
Yep.
So, and then I had to create 20 counties. I created 28 counties in the African American Caucus, which never were there before. So the problem
That's
is
right.
that the people who run, they can run their mouths and they can say things that what other people won't call them on. I'm calling you on it. And that's the end of it. And we've had some pretty bad chairs of the Democratic
that's
Party.
The pain center.
But I think we have a good one who's
Thanks.
In there now.
Because none of that could be,
he could be one of the best in
none
years.
None of that could be related.
Yeah,
Randy,
in the state party chair?
That's right. And
yes.
Randy's going to be on in a little while. But
Randy's coming on today. That's great.
He's on today, too.
So,
and the thing is, what's that? Go ahead. What's that? Go ahead. What I was going to say, he is a great
president.
I found out just from the first time speaking to him, which was yesterday, he sounds very sincere. And the things that he was saying was a breath of fresh air. But while we're talking about the county, you said there's 6 counties that come under the 12th district. Which county is
right?
Have you
met, 6 counties.
Have you
met? And listen, before my time run out, I want to make sure that people know that the district convention will be on May 18th, which is
all the district conventions.
All districts, and we will be meeting in Greensboro, North Carolina, at the Guilford County Democratic headquarters, and that address is 2300 West Meadowview Road.
2300 West Meadowview Road.
Meadowview Road.
Okay.
That will be in Greensboro.
Now,
so we need people to be committed to get there.
How many people do you believe might be coming to that?
Well, I'd say about 150 to 200 people.
You are the chair or you are running for the chair?
I am running for the chair. I am currently the second vice chair of Congressional District 12 and have been there for the last 4.5 years.
What about the what's happening on the board? Is it being shook up? Any people leaving or the whole board leaving or what?
Well, our current chair is stepping down because, as I said, she's the new mayor of High Point, North Carolina, which is, you know, and she also serves on the League of Cities, National Board of the League of Cities. And she's just so busy. And she worked with me over the last 2 years, mentoring me for the district office. So she's in support. There are other board members. Some might be running for re-election. We have rep now. She's a representative. Representative Carla Cunningham is the chair of our Minority Affairs for District 12, and the first vice chair is a male. So should I am blessed to be the chair, we'll have to get another male. I'm not sure the current one said he might not run. He's from Forsyth County. And our third vice chair has already told me he wants to run for re-election. His name is a young man named Harold Eustee, a veteran. You might know him. He's now in law school. Harold Eustee. He's from he fought in Afghanistan. Uh-huh. And he's in law school, very sharp young man, and has done a lot to help our district. So we're looking for people who approach me saying they want to run with me for secretary and treasurer. So we'll see. We'll have a very strong board, but I would like to expand the board to include people at large and again, subcommittees representing different portions of the district. This is a very, like I told you, it's a snake-like district.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, definitely. This was a very snake-like district, 12th district.
Well, it's been created and litigated over and over again.
I don't know, can you meet with any other county chairs yet if you're not the district chair yet?
Yeah, well, I could. I could meet with the county chair. Yes. That's another critical piece. The district chair should work closely with the county chairs because you want to make sure there's, from the state party chair to the district chair to the county chair, there should be, you know, seamless. As a matter of fact, the district chair serves as the cabinet for the state party chair.
Right.
And I am definitely a huge supporter of our state party chair, Randy Bowler. As a matter of fact, I did put his name in second nomination at the SEC. He has been extensively involved in a lot of community activities when we worked as healthcare, the Charlotte Healthcare Coalition, which, again, Carla Cunningham and myself were co-chairs. It was Randy Bowler and a lot of the people he had organized up in that part of Chatham County, Durham, to get resources to help our group function. So you remember that. That was in 2009. And little did I know that he would run. So we are very fortunate to have someone of Randy's caliber to be chair of our party.
Well, the what do you see your most important mission as the district chair?
What do I see as my most critical mission as the district chair?
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd have to say, aside from communication, voter education. I think voter education on the issues. When you and voter registration, to increase the voter registration, get the voter education, and see that people get to the polls and vote. That's just a primary. Everything else covers that, communicating about the issues. I think people, when they know what issues are and how that issues impact them, they are much more likely to go out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so the candidate that come before the district who's going to take Congressman Mel Watt's place, they've got to be a different kind of candidate from when Congressman Watt ran in 92.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 92 was like getting President Obama elected in 08. We were excited. People stood in long lines.
Oh, I know that.
You remember? So the next candidate is going to have to be up to date to see how they're going to impact and help the people.
Well, what do you think the way this regressive party in Raleigh is running things, what do you think would help change the playing field? How much, see, the 12th district is majority Democrat anyway. But do they come and how much of the voting goes for the African Americans in the 12th district?
What is the voting?
Yeah, the percentage.
Okay. You're saying, like, if you look at what's happening in Raleigh and
right.
the 12th district, what can be done maybe to ensure that either we can change Raleigh,
right.
put new elected officials in there? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes.
Well, as you, first of all, Mike, you just said it's primarily a Democratic district, okay? So we're not going to, as somebody told me, it's kind of a safe district for Democrats. So they should be able to speak out more to help people. I think what the 12th district is going to have to do is work across the state and help districts that are semi-purple, in those areas where there might be a lot of independents who are on the fence, and try to get people who are Democrats to help put the strategy to help them get elected into the state house. I don't think that we can change the state house in 2 years, but we can begin to change it by changing independents who used to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Vote with the Democrats.
That's true. There should be no reason. Matter of fact, anybody who voted for that fool McCrory and a progressive party now sees that, you know, they're going to be in that little tub with everybody. Because if you're green, you're going to be screwed by the GOP.
That's exactly right.
Is money, and then now you can see it now. What they want to do, passing laws, they want to take away your tax credit if you live out of state, but you go into a state school. They're going to
That's
take
exactly
tax credit from your parents. I mean, are these people insane? It makes no common sense whatsoever. But
no, they never make sense, and it's all about. Punishment and
yeah, it's all about
people.
Right.
You know, it's never about and anything logical.
And logic doesn't. You can't talk about logic in the same breath with the GOP and the Progressive Party. You can't.
No. And you know, Mike, one of the things, and Thomas, what was said? You mentioned our governor. See, when he was running, he ran on this wink, wink that I ran the city of Charlotte. I was the mayor of Charlotte 14 times. And he was presenting an image that he was just going to be this wonderful, great guy. The mayor of Charlotte was going to be the governor. Now, for people like us, we knew better. Because whenever you have Art Pope as your budget director.
Believe that. And that's what I just I have the big bear wolf guard the chickens.
Yes. And a point to. Point the wolf over recruiting chickens.
But this is all this is about. This is about they had to get over, take over the state because we had, for the first time in decades, nuclear power back on the books. We have the future of fracking that's been being held off of that. But all of this development and all that's going to go through now, that's why they're desperately trying to dissolve all the committees and oversight that we had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
but. It was about getting him in power, and they'll just do and lie and say anything to get there. But it's kind of
that's exactly right. Look what they did with Charlotte Airport.
Okay. Oh yeah, well hey, they want that.
We're about
boys.
To experience a little, you know.
They want that.
A little. Michigan and Wisconsin, Ohio up here. It's not going to be pleasant. People are going to wake up.
That's right. I hope that when I'm elected as the chair of the 12th. We're going to wake them up some more. We woke them up in the 12th this time. We said, it's not enough to say you're Democrat. You have to increase. There were a team of us against a lot of people who worked with us. Carla used the data. She's an incredible person on the minority statistics in the 12th, and we were able to use that data to target and encourage people to get out and vote. We put people on polls. I mean, it's hard work, but that's what democracy is, working hard.
Yep.
But
I will be calling on both of you.
What's that?
I will be calling on both of you. Thomas, when we have a forum, I hope that, as I was asking Mike, I'd like for him to have his radio show there, that we people can have a forum and speak to.
We have a phone going off in the background here. I thought it was you calling already.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You're already calling. You're already calling.
The thing is that we have a people don't understand. I was trying to solicit this from Randy yesterday. People don't get involved because they do not feel it's going to hurt them. And if they say, well, hey, then the other half of them say, it's already hurt me. They can't kick me further down than I'm already.
Yeah.
So why should I do anything?
You're right.
How do you tell? What do you tell somebody that tells you that?
Well, I'll tell you what. They can get further down. I work with seniors, and some of the seniors didn't want to come out. Oh, they don't want to be bothered. I said, okay, they said, well, I get my benefit. I said, what happens if one day, and this was before they did the automatic deposit, you go to the post office and you open your check, and that check is cut in half, your social, Medicare, Medicaid. And they looked, they said, but they wouldn't do that. I said, why wouldn't they? Right. I said, what if the state decides not to accept the insurance?
Well, you said that already.
They didn't believe it. But this was last year before it happened.
Right.
Guess what? When the governor rejected it, now we don't have places for people to sit when they come to the meeting because they're scared. They realize they're in a different time. So those people who say, well, I can't get any lower, I say, well, yes, you can. Tell me your status right now. Well, I get this. I get some unemployment. I said, how long do you think you're going to get the unemployment? That will be cut come July 1.
Right.
And they don't believe it. I have to show them the rest. They said, well, when did this happen? I didn't know they were voting against it. Again,
yeah.
It's information.
Again,
they keep it down.
Your education of the voters is so important because people are always selfish. They always think about themselves. And they don't realize they're part of a community because as soon as, you know, they may be safe, their job may be okay for a little while. But, you know, when the postal worker and the school worker and the garbage worker are all being impacted, your community is impacted.
It's
you know, it all comes back home to roost.
That's correct.
And that's
because
what people
have
think
jobs.
It's not going to affect them, but guess what? It is going to affect you. You know, when the garment factory closes across town or when the teachers aren't getting paid, being furloughed and things like that, it affects everything. Then the grocery store goes and closes and the library closes and, you know.
That's right.
But
you are right. Like, think of what happened in education. They are cutting back on public school education and that sequestration cut. Look what happened with the sequestration money caused the air traffic controllers to be furloughed. A lot of people say, oh, that's not a big deal, until they have to stand in long lines. And it only changed when some of the Congress people didn't want to have to stand in line, even though they had voted to make sure the sequestration went through. So you're right, Thomas. If you lose a job, you don't have money to go to the store to buy food, that store, everything is connected. We're all connected.
Hey, I mean,
and that's why, Mike, when you asked me what's my first mission, it's connecting these counties. What happens in Forsyth impacts Cabarrus, impacts Guilford, impacts Mecklenburg, and Rowan needs to know it's going to impact them too.
Well, all I have to say is that if we're going to expect a major push, we have to expect a major blowback from these neocon regressive party members who will say, hold on, why are they doing that? Because, you see, they are in the same boat as us. but they're constantly told, oh, don't worry about that. You have no water in your house? Don't worry about it. We'll get it turned on. Yeah, they get it turned on. 3 weeks later, you get to water. You're at water? Don't worry. We'll get it turned on. And 3 weeks later, they say, you didn't get your water yet? Well, that's those daggone Democrats over there.
You're right.
And you see, that's why you got to trust me. See,
that's
they,
right.
This sequester, this sequester, Obama said, these Republicans, this aggressive party, is not going to kill the military.
Right.
But these are the people, just like the rat that's caught in a trap, will chew off its leg to get away. That's what they're doing, chewing off their leg so
yes.
they can get free. They
You're
don't
right.
care, everybody. They don't care. The bottom line is, if I'm still alive, I'm still making millions. Yeah. If I am on the stump. They don't care.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to worry about. That's what we have to worry about. I mean, they will chew off their leg to despite the trap coming down and breaking the leg. So how do you take care of someone that doesn't care if they screw their own party voters, their own constituents?
Wow.
You know, what are you going to do then? There's nothing you can do. You can only be right. And it's just like what they're saying with the terrorists, where they can be wrong 50 times. Well, we can, but we only have to be wrong once. Yeah, right. Well, with these regressive party, they can be wrong 50 times, and then they can be wrong enough 50 times. They don't care.
And they have been. You're right.
Absolutely correct.
So, well, I think it's going to take the brilliant minds of people like you and Thomas and others to help Randy going forward.
Well, we will. And I want to thank you, Dr. Robbie, coming on and on the show. And so what's your schedule running around this week, this weekend?
Well, I am, matter of fact, I am going up to Cabarrus. I hope to see our sister up there, Miss Dr. Grace Liam Galloway, this weekend, and help push out for her. She's running for District 8, and she will be so powerful for that district. She is a nurse practitioner. She runs a free clinic, and I'm going to be meeting with her and meet some of the Cabarrus 12th delegates, and I'm communicating with as many people as possible, and we're looking forward to having a very successful district. But I hope that after this convention, I hope that both you and Thomas will hold my feet to the fire, and I would like to have the opportunity to come back and keep you and your listeners abreast on what we're doing in the 12th.
I thank you, and we're looking forward to that.
Okay.
We are looking forward to that, and I don't know if I've gotten a copy of the district meeting. I don't know if I have. If you have one handy, can you send it to me?
I will send it to you.
I'm in the 12th district.
Speak it off the phone. Yes, for the 12th district.
Well,
okay.
My only advice to you and your work with the progressives up there is a very old saying: go forth and multiply.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I will remember that. And I invite both of you to come, okay? Thank
Alrighty.
You so much for this opportunity.
Sure.
You've helped
thank
to
you.
Expand my candidacy, and I appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
That was Dr. Robbie Akir.
You know what I
who's
like?
Who's running for the 12th
district
chair. That's what it is. Right.
You know, I love the fact that, do you notice the candidates that we field? They're doctors. they're educators. They're scientists. They're things like this. It's refreshing to me to talk to intelligent, compassionate people.
Well, you mean they're not like these people?
The P.O. boxes in Montana?
The P.O. boxes in Montana?
National Coalition for the Hatred of Others?
Well, you mean...
What?
Well, we have this this little tittle-tale I like to play you about from Mr. Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz?
Yeah, Ted Cruz. This is...
A registry is, number one, inconsistent with the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, but number two, historically, has been the predicate for taxation, regulation, and ultimately for confiscation. And that's what this fight is all about, is they want a registry because they want to limit the liberties of law-abiding citizens.
Now, the thing I never understood about this, how can... I got my car registered.
Mm-hmm.
Are they limiting how much I can drive? Why would they limit you if they know where you're at, if they know that you bought a gun?
Right.
In the last address.
How is that limiting?
The Dago State has my registration.
Right.
They got my face. They can know if I have insurance. I mean, so
I mean but you've got to. To go fish, you got to register. To go to the library and pick up a book, you got to get a car. You know, I don't understand this.
Well, because
you can't register us. You can't get a database of us. There are 9 kabillion databases already.
Well, you're right. It's too late. It's too late
thing.
Already. See?
That's the thing.
Unless you've been living out in the woods.
When I moved down here, got my driver's license, I started getting caboodles of mail. I couldn't figure out why. I was like, how do these people know where I am? I had 9,000 trillion billion. I talked to the Department of Motor Vehicles sales.
They sell
the
what?
Information
right.
To raise money. And they told me they did. They had to disclose. They said, no, we sell that information, and that's why you're already on all the advertising lists and all that kind of stuff. But they said, think of it as a welcome.
They're so worried about their guns. We already know where you are, stupid.
Yeah.
You registered your vehicle.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. Well, but you see, you registered a vehicle, but that doesn't mean they'll have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is.
But this is the same mentality of people. I was in line with somebody the other day, and the person said, hey, do you want to join the club for the store? You know, get a savings card or whatever. And they said, no, I don't want to be on any list. And then they pay with their credit card. Hey, genius. If you drove to the store and you have a bank account, they know more about you than anyone should ever know.
Now, the thing is that this fool, Cruz, you know, and he wants to, he's doing all this because, you know, they keep saying he wants to run for president. But remember, he wasn't born in this country.
He's like ham? Is he like bacon? That doesn't quite look
yes,
right.
Yes.
And you keep thinking, this isn't like bacon I had back home. What kind of bacon is this? What kind of
Canadian
bacon?
Bacon.
It's Canadian
That's
bacon.
That's what it is. He, but there's some, he came out with the thing now that he is more legitimate than Barack Obama because his.
He's not from Al-Qaeda.
Mother was a U.S. citizen. I said, wait a minute. Barack Obama's mother wasn't a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, what?
She looked like she was U.S. citizen, and so did her parents. What is this fool talking about?
Hey, and the last time I checked, her blondness looked more National Policy Institute than his cruiseness. I'm just saying.
But you see, you get over when you're talking to the morons on the right.
Yes.
Complete and utter moronic nonsense. And it is fool Jim DeMint again. You know, he has screwed up things so bad that the thing that we're going to play this next week, but he has grown up the deep end so bad with the at the Heritage Foundation. He has this guy who's writing the talking points he's writing for the Heritage Foundation where they talk about Hispanics, are too dumb to be president.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the southern hemisphere of the United States will never develop enough mind power to run a country like this. And the guy, that's the guy right there, he's the one who put it in there. See, No one knows whether Hispanics will ever be able to reach the party with whites, but they perform the way
they can't reach IQ parity with whites.
That's right. They never reach IQ parity with whites.
Wait a minute. We're going to get to it in a minute, but we were just talking about this freaking National Institute of Racist Pigs, that one of their things was that all these other groups are intellectually incapable of being white.
So we're going to read the thing. He said, the troubled heritage. No one knows whether Hispanics will ever reach IQ parity with whites. But predicting that way, Hispanic immigrants will have
low IQ children and grandchildren, and it's difficult to argue against that. So basically, they're in the first four months ahead of that institution. Yeah,
this is the guy who's right.
Well, they're all troglodytes. And you go down there, and they got claws.
And that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did see a documentary.
Yes.
That in the heart of South America, there are still tribes of Indians that are not advanced.
Was that right?
They don't have Coca-Cola machines.
Oh, man.
They don't have T-shirts, baseball caps, and they don't drive cars. It's as if his prediction's coming true. They must be intellectually inferior to the rest
Absolutely.
Of the human race.
Because why wouldn't you be smart? Why wouldn't they want to wear what I'm wearing? Gucci.
Exactly. In the middle of the Amazon.
In the middle of the Amazon.
Because I found that Nike helps me when I have to outswim the piranha chewing on my hip.
Well, it's so funny. Remember the film Blazing Saddles? it shows Little where they're going to make him the sheriff of this town. And he says, you're the sheriff. He says, yeah, dead sheriff. But no, you'll be a good sheriff. And next thing you see him, he's dressed up in this fancy cowboy suit and boots and spurs and a saddlebag that says Gucci on his eyes.
This is the thing that gets me about Cruz. I'm looking at this quote from him. Now, this is a guy that's, you know, filing amendments, everything else to strengthen border security, to cut immigration down, you know, all this stuff. And this is his quote. You know, I just love these people because of, you know, what they say and what they do. There's always some odd moment. So this is a guy who's trying to, you know, lead the charge on those dirty, ignorant immigrants. Give it up. And then he says this, quote, America is a nation of immigrants built by immigrants, and we need to honor that heritage. Well, thank you, Mr. Cruz. Glad to see you're honoring that immigrant heritage.
What the hell?
Oh, man.
Let's see who we got. Somebody else got in the line here. Who is? Hello there. Who's this?
Michael, this is Chairman Randy Voller. I've had a wild day. I apologize. Could not call in earlier.
Chairman.
No, you are. Matter of fact, you're ahead of schedule already, but that's all right.
Oh, you know what? That would be a first.
No problem.
The thing was that your ears were ringing because people were talking about you on the air just a little while ago and say that he is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I'm the son of an immigrant, so we had to learn to slice our bread. It was called pumpernickel because my father, you know what he used to call Wonder Bread? Paper towels. My dad liked to eat real bread.
Yeah, well, my father loves rye and pumpernickel. The dark pumpernickel he liked.
That was my dad.
Oh, yeah. He loved it. And with butter, it took me some, you know, I was looking at the Wonder Bread. I liked it when it was almost toasted, just before it started getting toasty. Then I take it out. I love it. I love that today.
I do too.
I think I'll go out and get some if I can. Well, you know, hey, today's the first day I walk without my cane to the car. First day out of the house. Since I think I'm gonna pay for it tonight, but my foot is seems like it's going to sleep here. But Randy, what I wanted to see, I'm glad you called back in. What is a program we won't go there yet. We were talking about what is happening with the Republican theocrats up there in Raleigh. It is so unbelievable that these people, they don't either don't care what they are doing, or it's about every man for themselves, or don't they understand that the people that they're hurting is going to be more of their people that's going to be hurt than Democrats, because they're the ones that are pushing these issues, and they think their people are not, or their people think they're not bound by the same plane that we're on. They don't think it's going to happen to them. I mean, they're taking away all the tax credits from the people who have kids that live in another state and are going to state colleges here. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, sometimes people get fooled and they think they're not bound by the laws of gravity. And I've yet to meet a man or a woman that aren't subject to the laws of gravity. And some of these legislators you're referring to, they ran for office perhaps on a single issue or inspired by an ideological point of view, perhaps even from Rush Limbaugh, not sure. And they get into office and they essentially start animating and harmonizing around these issues, and they're making this music. It's a drum beat. You know, in the old days, and I'm only 44, I hate to use the term, but basically before technology allowed us to produce sausages faster than we could count them, people deliberated and they debated, and you couldn't just spit out 800 proposed laws with a push of a button. You
right.
actually had to have a discussion. You actually had to think about it and deliberate and debate. They're not deliberating. They're essentially putting through a radical, extreme, ideological agenda. And this has happened throughout history. Anytime people have tried to radically change things in a direction that serves only the few, they've operated exactly like these guys are operating.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, I just love that the party of, we have to be enemies of big government. We have to do away with, you know, all of this horrible stuff. These are the people who say we can't register a gun, but we have to register, you know, every voter with ID laws. You know, we can't control anything, but we have to enforce a state religion. You know, I mean,
it's
unbelievable what they come, the gymnastics they go through.
And that's one of the things they want to do now. They want to have a state religion. A state religion. It's incredible. Missouri. I was telling Tom about a couple of things that the Missouri wants to do now. They want to have a state religion, but they also want to demand that if you're a teacher, when you come to school, you bring your gun. If you don't have a gun, you're fired.
Hmm.
I mean,
mandatory carrying of weapons.
Right, the mandatory carry. Everybody must carry a weapon.
Which isn't this like a federal crime to carry guns in the
book? Well, you know, I don't understand.
I don't understand what's going on.
Here's what I don't understand. Every time I saw Wyatt Earp on TV or Gunsmoke, you checked your guns at the sheriff's office or at the town entrance when you came in.
Yep.
They didn't lie. I was looking this up the other day. Wild Bill Hickok and Wyatt Earp, when they were the marshals in Tombstone and Deadwood, did not allow people to carry guns in town.
Yeah. The myth of walking around with a strap
right.
on your leg.
That's a myth. That didn't happen. And if you didn't carry in Tombstone or Deadwood or Dodge City, why the heck are you going to carry it in Charlotte or Missouri?
Right.
I mean, you understand what I'm saying, Randy? Well, where do they get the gumption? Are people that stupid that they don't understand that?
Well, first of all, people are very selective about how they want to read the Bill of Rights. And I find it interesting that people will pass over the First Amendment, which is what really gives us most of our rights, the right to assemble, a right to free press, you know, address grievances. They go to the Second Amendment, they focus on it, and then they parse the Second Amendment and forget about the well-regulated militia part.
Right.
And focus
right.
on we have a right, you know, to strap on guns. And, of course, the guns that were available in the 18th century are no way – they're relics. They're antiques compared to what we have now. So, of course, the ability to do damage and to project damage is far greater than they could have conceived. And let's not forget this. I don't know who else on the call, but I liked his comment. They want to investigate us to death, the vote. And the franchise should be universal and expanded to bring as many people in to vote in elections, like we were talking about the other day. However, they want no investigation of your rights for a gun, whether you should be carrying a gun, whether you have mental problems or other, or you're violent. So the way I look at it is we restrict ballot access and give all the bullet access you want. What kind of society does that?
To put a point on what you did, just listen to this for a minute there, Randy.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, that was said by the guru of the Republican Party about 20 years ago. So They don't want everybody to vote. They don't care if everybody votes. All they want is their select little few. Make sure you get out there and vote, because we'll win without them.
I'm with you. They don't want everyone to vote, but it's a dirty little secret that they know it's a dog whistle. They know how to make that message come across to appear that they're being fair when they're not, and to hide behind things like we're just trying to ensure fair elections when we know that's not true at all. When the evidence is presented, as I said, you're more likely to probably be struck by lightning than to find an actual case of voter fraud involving impersonation at a ballot. And I actually have taken cases to the State Board of Elections out of Chatham County where we found real fraud, but they don't care. To them, this is a big ideological battle, and they want to deploy their pieces the way they want, and these are folks in the General Assembly who are essentially chess pieces on a board. Some of them are a king, a queen, bishops, but a lot of them are pawns. They just don't know they're pawns.
Well, it's sad. And we were talking earlier with some other people about some of the changes that are coming down, but not to rehash all of that, but one of the ones that's bothering me is this, we've had this class warfare going on for quite a while, and, you know, we all know that in general terms, the Democrats side with people and Republicans side with corporations and whatnot. But so we have this now, this newly elected governor and team in place that are trying to radically alter the entire, tax structure of the state so that corporations won't pay anything, but the people will pay everything with the expanded sales tax, just by giving, realigning our economy. I don't understand, again, why do we allow this endless class warfare? This always the war on the poor.
It's easy. It's easy, I guess. Randy?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah, but it's easy to have a war on the poor.
Well, I mean, they're defenseless. It's just kind of sad. I mean, even Thomas Jefferson, you remember his famous quote? He says that experience declares that man is the only animal that will devour its own kind, because no milder term can apply to the general preying of the rich on the poor. But that's the way they, I don't know, they're putting this policy into place, though, and it's disturbing.
One of the things that I want to touch on, I understand that yesterday some members of the Legislative Black Caucus were turned away when they were trying to speak to the governor.
Yes.
And so what was all that about? What were you trying to speak to the governor about?
Well, I mean, there has been an awful lot of agitation and involvement from citizens coming to Jones Street attempting to get redress for a series of bad legislation being proposed and passed, and disrespect essentially of the other party. I mean, let's not forget, Democratic congressional candidates in the aggregate received hundreds of thousands of more votes than the Republican opposition. They just were gerrymandered out. The people are with these ideas, and not only that, recent polling shows a shift in the state as well. That this state, they're always saying it's a center-right state. It's false. The people are a lot more progressive than they've been giving credit for, and the more they hear of this stuff and feel it, the more upset and angry they become. And the Black Caucus, I was out there with some of their leaders last week when the students and others marched and assembled on Jones Street. I was there in the church on Tuesday. On Monday, they had a bunch of arrests. They're wanting to talk to their governor, who represents all citizens, and probably have a dialogue about what's going on. Now, granted, they didn't make an appointment, but I'm pretty darn sure that if the CEO of a major corporation had rung in and said, I happen to be in town and I want to come and see you, they would have made the time.
Oh, definitely.
In a New York minute. You know that. That's absolutely true. That is absolutely true. Well, what is the sort of strategy around? I know you just got there. There's so much you have to do. Has there been any strategy or any thought of what has to be done, what has to take place to see that we will not be under the shoe for the next 10 years?
Well, yeah. The first thing that has to happen is that Democrats and like-minded unaffiliates and folks that identify as Green Party members, and perhaps even some of the, my father was a Republican that converted to a Democrat. He was more of a business Republican, and in the last 6 years he converted. Folks have to come over and start working together as a block and organize around some basic principles, but the party and its leadership and faithful. And it's and when I say leadership, I include people in, you know, county seats, like I work as a mayor, all the way to the legislature here in North Carolina. We are the opposition party. We must recognize the role that we are playing now. We are not the party in power, and some of our behaviors and tactics and the way we think has to evolve. And I think that it's very difficult for folks that have worked in an environment where they were always in power to suddenly adapt to this change. That's the first thing, recognition.
Well, yeah, and we don't want to be like them because they have a major habit, that Progressive Party, of overreaching. So, we know it's kind of difficult for us now, and it seems like everything is being thrown at us, but you just have to look at everything that these guys are pushing. They haven't got one single bill that represents jobs. Not one bill. They have bills on abortion. They have bills on the right to vote. They have a bill on voter fraud. They have a bill on voter ID. Nothing on jobs. And this is what needs to be talked about more than anything. Where are the jobs? These people, they want to cut. Matter of fact, the economy would have been doing super, super good if they didn't cut government jobs, city, state, and federal. I mean, we've lost probably 10 million or 15 million of those across the whole United States. I mean, we need infrastructure. God forbid if we have a bridge that falls down because it hasn't been serviced in 25 years. But, you know, this means nothing to them. So that's why when I say they overreach, they're overreaching, I think, and it's going to come back to haunt them. No wonder they were not in power for 125 years.
Well, I'd also like to say, Michael, that in this state, folks have a bad habit, I mean, in this country, of not reading their history. I mean, look, the Republicans of Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, are not the Republicans today. And the Democrats of that era, there was a fusion party in the 1890s in the state that's very similar to what President Obama has put together with these different groups. We're very similar to that. You know, what's happened is it's shifted. So when people say the we've been out of power, we're in power, I said, no, the new boss is the same as the old boss. We haven't really had the change that needs to happen. We're still having a war on the poor. We're still cutting education. We're still allowing people to pollute our water. We're still attacking minorities. That hasn't changed. It's just that the nameplate changed.
The nameplate.
By the way, that is one of my absolute rock bottom. You know, I come from educators. My grandparents, my mother, they're all teachers. So I'll grant you that. But I cannot, for the life of me, fathom how a party who prides itself on promoting Americanism, patriotism, you know, everything, wave a flag, put a bumper sticker on, all this type of stuff, has endlessly assaulted education and undermined it in this country. They don't want to pay teachers. They don't want to build schools. They don't want to, you know, give kids supplies. I don't understand it. That is the entire future of the country, hands down. You won't have another worker. You won't have another politician or lobbyist or Wall Street banker or anything else if you don't have education. Why is that not the absolute fundamental patriotic act right there to educate the next generation of children?
And right now, what have they done? What they're doing in the legislature in Raleigh is that they're pushing for not having pushing to have more charter schools. Am I correct, Randy?
Yes, they're pushing to have more charter schools, which I think is another abusive process, abusive power. I mean, the idea of charter schools originally was to be a laboratory workshop of innovation where you could actually do a few things that might help the public school system. It was not meant to be a replacement of the public school system. It was not meant to be a parasite of the public school system. It was meant to be a small laboratory that we could work through new and emerging ideas to benefit the public school system. Now, my mother is an educator too, and I attended public school and I attended Catholic school and actually 1 year at a Lutheran school. So I've been on both sides of this, but my parents paid their taxes and also paid when I went to private school. They didn't get a voucher or they knew what they were doing when they did it. And then I attended public university. So I'm completely appalled that they would actually try to undermine and dilute a strong public school system and not invest in it in order to create a series of these practically unregulated institutions where we really have no idea how the students are going to be served. I mean, that's my kind of cut on it without going too deep into it.
Well, you're absolutely correct, because I went to Catholic school my whole life myself, and I want to tell you, you didn't happen to have the Jesuits, did you? You didn't happen to have the Jesuits, did you?
My high school was Andran in what would be Gary, Indiana, in Lake County, right next to Chicago, and that was basically the bishop's school, named for him, Andrew Andran. It was St. Basil, but we did have Jesuits that came through, and I can attest to their intellectual rigor. But my sisters went to the public school in Porter County, Valparaiso, which is one of these public schools that looks like a junior college because it's so well funded. And the problem in this country is that the way our tax system works, this is what the Landro cases are dealing with, is that if you're getting funded from tax dollars and the tax base isn't growing and it's being parceled out in a way that the folks can't afford to pay for it without investment by the state and investment by other partners, you're getting unequal education. And
right.
It's as simple as that. And the other call or the other guest was just referring to this idea that people don't want to educate folks. And I read an article years ago, I think might have been in Dollars and Cents, was in a magazine, but it was talking about this concept of the three-legged stool upon which the system had been built, which is, low wages, low education, low expectations. Mm-hmm. And so if that's what you have going on, then people are never going to dream or want to be anything more than just a cog in the machine with hardly enough education to actually make educated decisions on whom to vote for or to question authority, so forth and so on.
Well, the other side of charter schools that really bothers me is that it's just part of a larger trend that people like Dick Armey and Cheney both have proposed for years, is the privatization of all public assets, because there's money to be made in it. And I get extremely mad that I see the public schools constantly being siphoned off into all of these private and corporate institutions. You know, we get more and more where, you know, used to, it was if you wanted to do your own private school and all that, well, you know, good luck with that. You go pay for it. Nowadays, you get guaranteed free tax dollars siphoned off of the public school in the area to go fund that school. And I think that's just wrong. It's turning education into a for-profit venture. It's kind of like the prison systems. You know, we've got this for-profit prison system that it doesn't benefit society anymore. It's just making money.
Yeah, well, the thing is that they will say, you know, hey, isn't this a democratic society? Aren't we supposed to be making? No, this is not a democratic society. This is a representative republic. See, they say society, and then they mix the constitutional end of it. They don't. Sometimes it's a democratic society, and sometimes it's a democratic republic. But when most people don't understand democratic republic from representative republic, we're in trouble. I mean, you're like you're talking in the wind. But what I want to ask you and have everybody out here in the listening audience, Randy, is that what percentage of the 100 counties have you been to yet?
That's a good question. I've made choices to visit places that had never been visited before. I can tell you two interesting things. So I went on convention day, one of the first on April 13th, out to Dare County and then Perquimans, and there's Hertford, and I had to drive all the way around because the bridge was out in Manio, so it was a long trip, and I had started down in Robeson County and then over in Fayetteville the night before, and they told me I was the first chair that had ever been to Perquimans. You know, that's part of G.K. Butterfield's district, and met with this wonderful woman who's the chair, and she had been a lawyer and African-American woman out of in New York, had family there, and we had a long talk, had ice cream together and talked about issues, and she'd run for Congress at one point. I've tried to make an effort to get as many places as I can, and really what I want to do is I want to travel this state, and as I told you before, and under this idea of a democracy revival, where essentially, like the old tent revivals, But what we're doing is I'm a drummer, I'm a hand percussionist. You know, we're bringing the music, and we're bringing people together, and we're going to talk about the importance of democracy in your community, and getting involved and building community, you know, place by place. And the revival aspect is one, kind of the way they used to do it with the tents, but two, the concept of spirituality has been hijacked, especially the Bible, by the right wing, except they fail to read the passages that talk about addressing the needs of the people, specifically Luke 6 verses 20 to 49, which is the Beatitudes. I mean, they don't talk about anything that talks about mercy and help and reaching out and you know, addressing those that are the least of these. They talk about fire and brimstone and other things that are very divisive and destructive. So my goal would be to, In one fell swoop, show people that the way forward is something affirmative, you know, something that's a prosperity, that we're the party of prosperity, and something that's about love, not about fear, not about anger, and not about hopelessness. And so Dr. Benjamin Chavis, who's a friend of mine, and of course now is feeling a lot better that Governor Perdue had given and finally pardoned the Wilmington 10, he and others and I have been talking about this concept. I brought it to him, and he's excited to work with me. We're going to do it, and we're going to roll around the state, and after we roll around this state, I might just roll right down to South Carolina and beyond, because I think the people need to know that, you know, the time has come to pull back and re-embrace the Constitution and re-embrace the spirituality that have been hijacked from them. You know, corporate personhood is essentially a perversion of the Constitution. It was a court ruling in the Santa Clara case of 1887-88, which was a misread. So we give more rights to corporations. And look, I'm a business guy. I have limited liability companies and an S-Corp. I'm not attacking companies. I'm just saying the idea that a company is more important than human beings is a perversion of what we stand for. And the idea that the spirituality that all the prophets have talked about is serving power and serving anything that would be adverse to the community is also a perversion. It is time to bring it together and bring it back to the people and bring it back to the communities, because in our communities, we can actually make the change we need to make. It just is going to take time and it's going to take effort, but I'm willing to do it, Michael.
Well, you know, you talk about Beatitudes. They do need it down in South Carolina. So Beatitudes, that's where you need to take it, roll it right on down here to South Carolina, because I tell you what.
Because I think a lot of this going on up here is like an infection from South Carolina.
Oh, it is. It really is. Well,
but you know what? I just want to say, Randy, I'm impressed that you are leading off by going places that have been neglected, and I'm glad that you're doing it. It's a sad thing, but it's very necessary. I can't believe that, you know, when you tell the story that people saying no one had ever been there before.
Oh.
It's pathetic, but I'm glad that you're leading the charge.
Do you know what Mary Perkins Williams told me today? She's with the Blackhawks, working with Willie Fleming, who's actually in Mecklenburg. She called me up and told me I was going to go to an event tomorrow, and they were real happy. It's a fundraising event, and they have to reschedule because it's conflicting with Mother's Day. And she said, you know, Randy, you're the first chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party who's ever agreed to come to our county and come to a big event that we're doing, ever. And I said, of course I'll come. I'll come all the time. I'm here to work with the people, you know.
Wow.
Now, what does that tell you? And what does it tell you about, you know, it's no accident that I'm under constant attack now, because I said I would reform things, I would put transparency on things, and I would come in and change how we do business. And I've been, recently in the last 10 days, constant attack. Most of it spurious, a lot of it frivolous, but it's related to the idea that I'm wanting to expand outward, Michael. I'm wanting to reach the people, and I'm wanting to do things differently. I wasn't put in by people of power for me to kiss the ring. I was put in by people who want the Democratic Party to be democratic.
Is that sort of a double entendre?
it could be an oxymoron, but
I mean, but you know, now, gee whiz, well, hey, there's nothing more I can say, because you're the one to put your foot in it. These people are going to say, holy cow, and he probably don't want us to bring our guns to the meeting either.
Sad.
Well, I want to thank you, Randy, for your time,
and you're
always welcome, and I'm going to be calling you about have you set
Thank
up
you very that? Much, and I appreciate it, sir, for your kind words, hopefully. I don't know if you're in Mecklenburg, but if Mike gives me your name or you give me your name, I'll come and visit with you. My goal is when I visit counties to line up and visit as many folks as I can. So when I was in Mecklenburg the other day, I was there. It was an 18-hour day, and I think I ate food everywhere I went. So I'm going to have to do some walking.
Well, I'm in Mecklenburg, but I was confined to the house because I had this sciatic. I couldn't. This is the first day I was walking without a cane. I went from a walker to a cane and started walking by myself. So, you know, I hope I'll be all better by
Monday. Woe to the rest of us. I'm going to have to kick the other knee to get something going again.
Oh, great. Okay, well, Randy, I really appreciate everything you're going to do. I can see this is going to be a fun time in the whole town tonight. It's going to be a fun time. And you just hang in there, and we got your back.
Yep. Keep fighting the good fight for us.
Thank you very much. We'll talk later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Kind of scary when you talk to these guys and they confirm your worst fear.
Yeah, well,
unrelenting war on the poor and trying everything they can to roll back the 1800s here.
I had to admit that I screwed up. I did not answer back the caller that was supposed to be on. So what we're going to do is he's probably gone for the day now. I'm sure he was waiting for me to send him the phone number that he could call in on. But let's play this bit here that we've been talking about all day.
Okay. Well, let's set this up a bit now.
Oh, well, set it up.
Look, this is a rebranding of a specific group to try to make themselves mainstream and palatable, but it's horrific, and you can't conceal.
Pointed head group?
Yeah, this is, you can wash the sheets all day long, but there's still sheets, you know. So let's listen to this guy, and then we're going to talk about it, but this is unbelievable.
All right.
Have you ever wondered, why isn't there an organization that works for us? From African Americans to illegal immigrants, from lesbians to left-handers, every ethnic and interest group has its own lobby or cultural foundation. The exception, of course, is white Americans. Our country's historic majority and founding population, the people that bear the unique heritage of Europe, Christianity, cultural excellence, and the scientific awakening. There are also our peculiar folkways, holidays, traditions, and customs that make us both uniquely European and uniquely American. Only we are who we are. So again, why isn't there an organization that has our interests at heart? As long as whites continue to avoid and deny their own racial identity, at a time when almost every other racial and ethnic category is rediscovering and asserting its own, whites will have no chance to resist their dispossession. This is our challenge. This is our calling. Won't you join us?
Now, for y'all that don't understand and aren't looking at this NPI website that I'm looking at.
NPI stands for?
The National Policy Institute, which is like saying the Aryan Nazi Party KKK Policy Institute. But they've got this.
But what is the guy? Explain what this guy looks like.
So, well, you've got John Denver. You know, shows up, and he's got his warm little jacket on and his sweater, and he's got the backdrop of the mountains in Montana behind him, and he gives his speech that with his, you know, fun music, and it's all sweet sounding, and then you realize what he's saying, and it's just like, what? And this is a guy who... Rachel Maddow featured him the other night, and she pointed out, like, he's so stupid. He uses one P.O. box for all of these organizations, these front organizations, and some of them are blatantly, horrifically racist. Some of them are Holocaust deniers, you know, all this different stuff. It's all him. But now he's got this slick front. He's got his own little website. You know, you can join the NPI. It sounds so innocuous. The National Policy Institute.
Oh, well, that's good.
But
National Policy? So Barack Obama makes his policy?
Yeah. This is the National Policy Institute. That sounds good. That sounds like what we should be interested in for America, you know? And then you realize it's for our people, our culture, our future. This is the part that I love. This is his direct quote from here. He's, have you ever wondered why isn't there an organization that works for us? From African Americans to illegal immigrants, from those lesbians to the left-handers, every ethnic and interest group has its own lobby and cultural foundation. What the heck? You know, especially the lesbians and left-handers. I mean,
see, that means me because I'm left-handed.
Hey,
there it goes. I'm a left-hander.
You know what? I just want to say this, Mike.
How about you, ambidextrous?
What if You're an African American
left-hander.
Immigrant
left-hander.
Lesbian left-hander.
Oh,
oh my God.
God!
It's like the end times.
OMG!
But look, this guy is interested in one thing, and again, it's you know the same. It always has been the same. We've seen this story before. This is a guy who was making fun of the writing. Holocaust Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, saying that that didn't even exist and, you know, well, at least we got a holiday out of it. Yuck, 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 you know. This guy is out for
and
white supremacy.
He was sitting, oh, and tell him where he's located at.
Well, yeah, he's in, it's, well, his P.O. box is in Montana, but
yeah,
that's
but
not the best part. I don't know if this is real or not, okay? But if you go to his site, you can contact him and join in on this. But he found a town called Whitefish. So it's the National Policy Institute of Whitefish, Montana.
Because like, that's the only fish they catch up there. They don't catch no marlin.
I want to look
salmon,
on the map. Maybe it's on the
White
River
fish only.
And, you know, in White County and, you know.
These are the people.
So he missed an opportunity here. He could have had a P.O. box down in Mississippi, like Jeff Davis Avenue or something. You know, he missed that whole boat. He could have, like, played it, you know, really well. Talked the entire Southern crew.
But, you know, how is he dressed? He was dressed like your regular.
No, he was dressed like it's like he's been to a class on this because he dressed like some economics professor
he had a pipe in his side pocket.
Yeah.
He had those
So this is my favorite part on his site. And you saw this on the thing last time. He's got this picture of this like beautiful white family, you know, with the kids hanging all over them all. And then right beside it he has the old revolutionary era flag of the snake chopped up.
Yeah.
And then he's co-opted that. And then added to the side of it, join us or die.
This is unbelievable. Join us or die.
Die, because his theory is that if we don't, and this is what he's talking about, if we don't keep all white people breeding white people only to sustain the whiteness of the white people, they will be destroyed by the encroachment of, you know, black and brownness, I guess, you know, as they slowly intermarry with all the tainted races. But
this is
what he also says. By the way, this is his dire warning. Reading from his site directly, he said, this is what my good friend, the co-founder of NPI, by the way, and the late Samuel Francis. So I guess he passed away. Sorry to hear that news, but. So Samuel Francis said this, and then he quotes him here. He says, if the people or race who created and sustained the civilization of the West should die, then civilization also will die. And as long as whites continue to avoid and deny their own racial identity at a time when almost every other race and ethnic category is rediscovering and asserting its own, then whites will have no chance to resist their dispossession. You see, we're going to be dispossessed of this land of ours. Hey, by the way, by ours, I mean, is that an Indian bone? Did I build my house on a teepee? Is that what I meant by ours?
I mean, this is, well, we're going to play it again.
Dispossession of the white American will have catastrophic effects for the entire world, not just our people, because America is the beacon on the hill.
Join us or die. To remind you of the Goldfinger in the Goldfinger, where he had Bond strapped on the on this table, and this laser is coming up. It's going to cut him right. He had his legs split open. And Bond says,
cut him right now.
"Do you think I'm going to talk?" He says, "No, I think you're going to die."
You know what we'd call that movie though in the National Policy Institute version? White finger. I mean, look, and this is...
It gets... I'm
this is
telling you.
Hey, look, this is a guy who literally thinks that, you know, all the other races, just like we talked about with lovely Mr. Cruz, All the other races are inferior. They're
lovely
intellectually
entities.
Inferior. They can't possibly have civilization on their own. You know, hey, by the way, I wonder if this gentleman from the National Policy Institute has ever taken a vacation somewhere in the world, like, or even seen a picture of other places, you know, where they have these things called ruins.
What?
If you go to places with ruins, they're often in the shape of like vast cities or pyramids even. And you look at them and you go, wow, that's awesome. I never imagined, you know, Acapulco could be so pretty. And look at those ruins right behind it.
Yeah.
You know, look at Egypt. You know, they're like dirty Arabs and stuff. But, wow, look at those pretty buildings right behind Cairo. That's a neat pyramid, you know. Now, there were civilizations, including very advanced civilizations that we based our civilization on, that were not white. Just wanted to, you know, clear the air.
Okay. Did he say anywhere in that, take back our country?
Oh, it's all this
take
is
back
about.
So that's where these Republicans got all that talking points about. Take back our country.
That's the thing. If you remember that Maddow also called him out on, the Republicans in our Congress right now are using this guy as the National Policy Institute think tank contributor to their policy papers for immigration law. This is their expert. And the reason they cite him is because he has a degree from a college, so that he's an expert.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't matter if it was an underwater basket weaving.
It
he has a degree. Well, this is just like
I think it was like origami kind of, but it was like swastika origami. You know, look at the shapes I can make.
Here's one thing I want to play for you. It's just like, why do people follow these people?
Well,
I'm going to show you the reason why. Just listen to this.
People want leadership, Mr. President. In the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone. They want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand. Lewis, we've had presidents who were beloved, who couldn't find a coherent sentence with two hands and a flashlight. People don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
Now, I want you to say that wasn't a reference.
People want leadership, Mr. President, and the.
That wasn't a reference to W.W. Bush and a flashlight, was it? It wasn't, right? Oh, I just want to know.
Oh, you make fun of W.
Oh, let's see who we got going here.
This is a man that has his own library now.
Oh,
can't make fun of
it. Right, but he can't get a library card because he don't know how to write.
Well, he's got
his mother's going to sign him in.
And that one book, My Pet Goat.
Oh, yeah.
Upside down on the shelf.
Yeah, but you know, it's not upstairs. It's down on the lower level, so he can reach it easier. Because if his head goes up higher, he gets dizzy. You know, dizzy. Hello there, caller. Who's this? Hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes?
Hi.
I said hello first. Who are you?
Hi, this is Diane Little out in
hello.
Union County.
Diane Little.
Well, you've reached the National Policy Institute.
Yeah, the National Policy
Discussion
Institute.
Board.
Discussion board. Yes, well, that's what we're doing.
Well, I just wanted to get your opinion of this, Miss Diane. I'm reading directly from his blog of May 7th, but he says that there was a staggering poll released Wednesday by the Fairleigh Dickinson University's Public Mind Group, and they found that 29% of the people they polled, which, you know, all 10 of them, but 29% think that an armed rebellion will soon be necessary to overthrow the evils of Obama. How do you think that National Policy Institute poll is affecting our discourse?
Could you clarify the evils of what?
You see, you're going to be the first one they chop the head off.
No, but wait. I didn't hear him. The evils of what?
Oh, you didn't hear me? I'm sorry. So there's a Fairleigh Dickinson University had a poll out, and they found that 29% of the people they polled think an armed rebellion will soon be necessary to overthrow the evil government that's in.
Fairleigh Dickinson? Are you kidding me?
That's where he says. But this is on the National.
Oh, who said it? He says that.
This is him quoting.
He's lying. Fairleigh Dickinson, I don't believe ever said that.
Well, this is a poll, they think.
Yeah, I'm not going to believe that whatsoever.
Staggering poll.
Yes, it is a staggering poll. And we have someone else joining us right now, and we're going to see. We'll have some.
Well, hi there, Michael.
Oh, I yeah. I have you, Diane.
Yes, yes. I'm listening to the poll at this time.
Did you do you know anything about this?
Well, only that it's an extremist, right wing. I'm just calling it right wing nut job extremist group.
The guy looks like a professor. He could have a pipe in his pocket. He had the nice cloak haircut, the American haircut. He had the soft colors on, green and brown, and the trees were all the background. He talked nice looking.
He wasn't like burning crosses. Or
no, he wasn't.
Very nice looking, very sweet.
I thought at first, after he finished his speech, he would say, "Now be careful. Don't start fires, forest fires."
Yeah.
But he didn't say that.
Well, he probably didn't.
Oh, God.
Looks very, very deceptive, and I think that that's the main reason why that particular person was the spokesperson. Because they don't want to come across as, and they're very smart marketing, tell you the truth, real, real bright. But the reality is they're scary as heck. That group is frightening.
Are we talking about scary groups? I mean, there's some scary groups down there in Union County, I understand. And I didn't have a chance to load my tape for today's show in here, but I'm going to play it next week because I recorded some of the goings-on down there. If I didn't know any better, I swear I was in Montana.
Yeah. Well,
yes, go ahead.
These people are real scary, and they all need to go to Fairleigh Dickinson University. These are the same people who were opposed to the Sandy rebuilding and a lot of other things. These people are extremists. They're very self-centered and selfish, and those types of people, to me, are unpatriotic.
Well, listen, now there's some of the things that is going on now. You can speak the truth here, Diane. Tell us exactly what is going on there, because we want to put it out there.
Well, the BBC contacted me and asked me just what you just asked me, and I pretty much told them that there is a racial divide.
You said
there is a racial divide that is raising its ugly head in Union County.
Ah.
So it's a divide that's older than me. However, what's happening now is there is a rush for power. There's an old guard, and there are people who have transited into Union County. Because remember, we're the fastest growing county in the state. And as a result of that, there are people who feel that their power is receding. And then there are other people who are jockeying for position. In the middle, of course, are the people who we're supposed to be servicing by being volunteers in our party, and they're getting the short end of the stick because of the power play. It's a racial problem. I mean, there are no elected officials. I think maybe one. There are two local officials for African American. But come on, this is 2013, and there are no congresspersons. There are no local commissioners. There's no one of any substantial position in Union County, I mean officially and unofficially. We have two people. We have Lundeen Cureton, who's been on the commission in her city of Mineral Springs for forever, and she's someone who has been there, and she's continues to be reelected because of her followers and the fact that she is a good candidate. She's a good commissioner. And then you have Frank Dees out in Marshville, who's the mayor. But other than that, you have to get permission to run for anything. And if you don't take your cue from the white establishment in the county, you pretty much are dead in the water. And what has happened with me is I'm the acting chair of the Union County Democratic Party, and I was pretty much told not a Yankee and not a black person, not in this county. I mean, and that's what was said.
Well, it seemed to me, well, I was interviewing 2 weeks ago some people out at Union County, and as I said, I'm going to load it on so we can hear it next week. But I couldn't believe the uproar when I came back inside of what was going on. Can you give us a short rundown of what happened?
Well, things were done maliciously to divert data from those who had to prepare the convention for the Union County Democratic Party, the secretary of the party, myself, and others who needed the information in order to prepare information and to make sure that the right people were truly delegates. We were unable to even make that assessment because the data, the raw data, the originals, which in every county a chair is given that information, all of that information was kept from us until five days before the convention. The secretary was emailed a list of delegates. And then the day of the convention, and I had to request it twice, and the person I requested it from had to go ask someone else if they could give it to me, I was given the actual book with all of the original certifications for every precinct in Union County. That did not allow me the opportunity to go through to make sure that everything had been done. There were precincts that were organized after the authorized date by the state chair of the 15th of March, and no one came to me for authorization. And so when I skimmed through the book in between trying to preside over a convention, I determined that we did not have a quorum because of all the illegitimacy I saw in the paperwork, and I recessed my convention until an investigation could be lodged. And people got out.
Okay, Diane, if I may interrupt really, really quickly, there are people who don't completely comprehend the whole, if the history. So, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Why were you acting chair? What was the chair?
Well, the chair, for the second time, resigned and relocated to Mexico. He asked me to meet him. Dropped in my lap a bunch of papers, some awards, the gavel, and the chair's handbook, and said adios. And he moved and relocated to Mexico. His house is up for sale. Matter of fact, it's going to be sold next week. And he has no intentions of ever coming back here. And that left me as the first vice chair. In the middle of annual meeting, the person to oversee the annual meeting, precinct meeting, and to also prepare for the convention.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're telling me that the chair of the party, the county party, took off from Mexico or places unknown. I wonder if you saw Mark Stanford. Anyway, he took off from places unknown, maybe the Appalachian Trail, I'm not sure, but why did he leave and not give you, as the second-in-command, the paperwork?
Exactly. He gave me absolutely nothing to do the job.
But he gave it to someone else.
Yes, he did.
Well, yeah, who did he give it to?
Right. And why?
Well, he gave it to two people he appointed vote bills and managers. One is a Nancy Rory, and the other is a Bill Hutton. And
he gave it to... But you see, at that time, let me stop for a minute. He hasn't the authority, according to the plan of organization, just to give it nilly-willy to anybody that's there. He has to follow the plan of organization.
Well, I would think that if he was really, if he cared about the plan of organization, he would still be chair. He wouldn't have left at that particular time if he really cared about the party. He wouldn't have left at such a tremendously busy period in our development. He wouldn't have gone.
Okay, so if I may ask one other question then. So let me get this straight. So the chair left, resigned his position, left. Moved to Mexico, right? So, and he left the vote bill and the information from the precinct is concerned to two vote bill the people. Okay.
Right, appointed people. They're not elected to anything.
Okay, so he appointed them. All right, so according to the plan of organization, my understanding, if the chair is unable to perform his or her duties, the first five steps in and becomes then the acting chair.
Yeah.
Right. So what was the problem that they would not give you this information?
Well, the chair was under tremendous pressure to not resign because they did not want in Union County an African American chair. That is something they've never had. That is something that they did not want. And they resurrected him twice. This was a man who was ill, who had a heart attack. As a matter of fact, I was there at the hospital during the surgery. Didn't tell anybody. His wife asked me to keep it quiet. And he was a very sick man. He had five or six stents in his arteries, and he needed to resign. And they resurrected him twice because they did not want an African-American to be chair.
Well, now, the chickens come home to roost now. Now, but wait a minute. All this is going on in Union County. Don't you have a district chair? Who's the 8th district chair? This is 8th district and 9th district, right?
Yes, we have dual districts in Union County. We have the 8th district and the 9th. And June Mabry is the 8th district chair, and Frank Deaton is the 9th district chair.
Did they do anything or say anything?
Well, when I took over Union County as the acting chair, Mr. Deaton called me and told me that if there was anything I needed, that he was at my disposal. However, June Mabry has seemed to take another turn into the planet Jupiter or something, because she has gotten all involved in this mess and has sent emails out to all the Union County people. All the Democrats in Union County, the so-called Democrat delegates and precinct chairs and vice chairs, and she actually has planned a executive committee meeting to resume the convention and to have elections at an executive committee meeting next Thursday, and she has no right to even come into my county and do anything, but this is what she's done.
Point of clarity here. Okay, so she's organizing an executive committee meeting. Is this the executive committee of the 8th district board? Is this the 8th district executive committee meeting?
No, this is the Union County Democratic Party executive committee meeting that is held every third Thursday of the month. I have called a meeting on Thursday, that will be May 16th, and she superseded me by putting out a notice to Union County Dems with an agenda that she will be handling elections at that meeting.
Did you ask her to do this?
I haven't talked to June.
Then it seems to me that she's out of place. This is a county issue, not a district issue. I mean, it seems to me that that's pretty evident. So,
well, being that I was a chair before, that is not my prerogative to do anything like that. I might come down and say, "What can I help you with?" But I can't call a meeting.
That's exactly right. She is so out of order that it's ridiculous. I don't know. And of course, you know, no one has given her the permission to do this. I've checked. See, this is something that she's done because she feels that as district chair, she is the overseer of all the counties in the 8th district. What she doesn't realize, and I don't know why she knows the plan of organization, but she's not utilizing it, is that the county is an autonomous body.
Yes, it is.
County chairs don't answer to the district chair.
No.
According to the plan of organization, the one that I've read. And so, I'm really not concerned with what she thinks she's coming to do. And I hope she reconsiders because it's not going to be a good evening for her.
Is the convention going to be at the same? I mean, are the two meetings supposed to be at the same place?
Yes, same place, same time. She's actually using my reservation to conduct her meeting because you have to reserve the armory.
So you know, you should cancel the meeting. You should cancel the meeting.
It gets more and more interesting, doesn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
I cancel the meeting and have a birthday party.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this is the mind of people who are incensed, who are so racist and so emboldened with power that it's totally corruption. It's total corruption. And this is the way they've been. And evidently this isn't the first time. This is just something that they're used to doing. The problem comes when you come up against a person that will not move. The problem is when you come up against a person who says that's not right and you're not going to do that here anymore. It's wrong. You know, I met Rosa Parks a year before she died. My husband was working at Disney, and I went with him to work one day, and as sometimes I would do, just to hang out at Disney until he got off from work.
Right.
And a bunch of school kids were running towards the American Pavilion, and I said, "What's the matter?" And they said, "Rosa Parks is in the American Pavilion." So I went to see. And I walked into that big, beautiful pavilion with the seal of the president on the floor. It's a gorgeous building if you've ever been to Epcot. And I'm standing there with a bunch of kids, I guess, on a school trip and teachers and what have you. And they were asking her questions, things like, "Weren't you scared? What color was the bus?" All kinds of questions that children would normally ask. And here's this little woman dressed in like a paisley white and pink dress, and there was a gentleman standing behind her wheelchair, and she was so, I mean, even her voice, even her answers were faint-like, you know. But what a peaceful-looking woman. And I let all the kids answer their questions, and the gentleman said, Mrs. Parks is tired now. I'm going to take her. Does anyone have just one more question?" And I raised my hand. And I said to her, I said, "Mrs. Parks," I said, "what you did was so courageous for your time. I can't imagine how you must have felt." I said, "but what I want to know is, what advice do you give young women who also are out here on the front lines and who want to have the courage that you have? What is your advice?" And she looked at me and she said, "never feel bad about doing the right thing." And it didn't even register to me. It sounded so simple, but I understand it now. I understand it now. You know, I sent something to some very good friends of mine last week or 2 weeks ago, and I let them know that heroes are people that do what they have to do when they have to do it, regardless of the consequences. Mm-hmm. And so that's what she did. And so that's her legacy, and her words resonate with me, that as long as I'm doing the right thing, I'm not worried about it.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Absolutely. I want to ask Grace, you are running for the 8th District Chair, am I correct?
Yes, I am. I am.
And how is that going?
It's going quite well, actually. I've been sent out flyers. I've talked to a lot of people from different counties. I've talked to them about my platform, what I want to do and what I plan on doing. We've talked about the problems in the 8th District and what.
Yes. Me. Hello there, Diane. Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, Grace, can you hear me?
I think we lost Grace.
No,
we
No, but she's still on.
Well, we lost her signal. She may still be registered. I may have to call back.
Oh, yeah, she's going to have to call back. Yes, she's gone now.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, I'm very glad that Grace wants to run because we need a fresh, honest face of integrity in the 8th District.
Yep. So, Grace,
yes.
The 8th District now has 13 counties.
12 counties. We have 12 counties right now. Yes, indeed. And here's the reason why I'm running. Okay, I did not ever plan on doing this. It's not something that I wanted to do and that I planned to do. You know, certainly not an absolute aspiration of mine. However, seeing what has gone on in the 8th District, seeing the cronyism, seeing the racism, seeing the mind-boggling abuses of power,
yeah.
And not just one, but so many. That's what made me decide that I needed to run. Now, let's go back, and if you don't mind, I'm going to talk about what Diane just said that Rosa Parks said. You know, when I was very young, my daddy used to say to me that there are two ways of doing things. You can do things right, or you can do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when you do things right, you're a middle manager. You follow. Mm-hmm. You're a follower. When you do the right thing, you are a leader.
Wow.
So you never, never be afraid. Like Rosa Parks said to you, my daddy said to me the same thing time and time and time again. It was drilled into my head from the time I could remember. My father used to tell me so many stories about people doing the right thing. You know, if Rosa Parks had done things right, we'd all still be sitting in the back of the bus.
That's right.
If Martin Luther King had done things right, we'd still be fighting for civil rights.
Yeah.
If Nelson Mandela had done the things right instead of the right thing, there would still be apartheid in South Africa. If Mahatma Gandhi had done things right instead of the right thing, India would still be a colonialist country.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and I want to bring in someone here who can take that information that you told us. He is our own
Counselor
Thor. Oh, my goodness.
General Counsel.
Hey, where did he find me? You know, where did he find me?
Michael.
I know.
General Counsel.
That's so wonderful and so kind, and I appreciate it. And I'm always glad to be on with you and to hear briefly the powerful comments from your other guests just makes me feel wonderful all over again. Just so happy to see so much movement building and so much power in North Carolina these days.
Well, yeah, but hey, that's why we need you and all your tentacles up here helping Reverend Barber and everybody else, which I know you're doing, but I want you just to listen, because I don't know if you're aware of this. We just found out about this. Have you ever heard of the National Policy Institute?
Yes, I have, but
I want you to listen to this. Just listen to this. It's a short piece.
Have you ever wondered, why isn't there an organization that works for us? From African Americans to illegal immigrants, from lesbians to left-handers, every ethnic and interest group has its own lobby or cultural foundation. The exception, of course, is white Americans. Our country's historic majority and founding population, the people that bear the unique heritage of Europe, Christianity, cultural excellence, and the scientific awakening. There are also our peculiar folkways, holidays, traditions, and customs that make us both uniquely European and uniquely American. Only we are who we are. So again, why isn't there an organization that has our interests at heart? As long as whites continue to avoid and deny their own racial identity, at a time when almost every other racial and ethnic category is rediscovering and asserting its own, whites will have no chance to resist their dispossession. This is our challenge. This is our calling. Won't you join us?
Now, only we are, or who
we are.
Who we are. I mean, this is right out of, they are no longer wearing the pointed hats. They're no longer shaving their heads. He's dressed like John Denver or Cary Grant with a pipe in his pocket back to the mountain. I mean, this is what's going on. And I'm telling you, Reverend Hale, your next stop while you're here in North Carolina needs to go to Union County because that's where they are hanging out.
Well,
some information on what's going on down in Union County.
This seems so outdated, and I was starting. I wanted to ask you when that was released, because it seems like you could take that from the beginning of the 20th century. But I know the technology was not there then to produce that kind of message.
That's right.
Now this is their branding message, but it is the same retrograde, crap that we've heard for centuries. These guys literally are calling for, return to the city of the founding of the country and all this other stuff. What cracks me up most about that statement is the return to the founding purity is Native American Indians.
Yeah. Exactly. You want to talk about the founders. I thought the same thing when I heard it.
Guys, they said, now this is one of the things, I'm looking on the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they about this group. Now this,
oh, they're talking about the Southern Poverty?
Yeah, they're one of the most influential Republican groups there now, the lobbying in there, but it was founded in 2005. They have a staff of four, and they produced two major papers. They said that two major studies that they produced so far. One was on the horrors and problems of affirmative action, why that needs to be done away with. And the other is the solution to immigration. And they said this is the title of the paper, just to give you an example. Mass deportation is the viable solution to America's illegal immigration crisis.
Wow. Yeah.
Right?
Enough said.
Yeah.
Now speak about enough said, how are things going with in North Carolina with this Regressive Party up here? I know Reverend Barber has been in the middle of it with your people up here.
Yes, and I really appreciate the visionary insight of Reverend Barber, who said that so many good things have been happening in North Carolina that it was a wake-up call for not just the regressive elements inside of North Carolina, but other southern states said, we do not want the people of color in our southern states, in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, to begin to take on the same steps of political empowerment as North Carolina. So people in North Carolina, you better shut those folks down now. So that's what we're really fighting against. It's not just North Carolina. It's almost a new southern strategy to try to make it harder for people in North Carolina to vote, and then use that as a prototype to prevent people in Georgia, Alabama, and other southern states from rising up in the same way that we saw in North Carolina.
Well, we have a new, and we have a new progressive a chairman of the Democratic Party in North Carolina who is looking to change a lot of these wink and nods that's been going on for the past 100 years.
Okay.
And so I think he is someone that you could possibly speak to, and he'll be very upfront with you. On the phone with us, there's a young lady named Grace Lean Galloway, who is running for the chairmanship of the 8th Congressional District. And, Grace, you had something to say you wanted to say.
Yes, I do. I completely agree with what has been said earlier, but what I do want to add is that it's a travesty. It's an absolute travesty what is happening. And if we don't step up now and fix it, and if we don't step up now and be heard and add our voices to the mix, we're going to be in deep trouble. And I'm not talking about just, minorities. I'm talking about all groups. Because pretty soon, they're going to come for you, too.
There you go.
Yeah, that's true.
There's, also, there's the feature of GOP operations that they've done this for quite a while, but they often try, Mike and I were talking a little bit about this earlier, but they'll throw everything up. They'll do everything in their power across the board in an insane push to just simply make society shift so far one direction that no matter what you do, no matter how long you're back in power, you spend all of your time just making up lost ground.
Right.
You don't ever actually progress.
Yeah, on the defensive.
Yeah, you're always. That's like if you look honestly at the like Clinton years, the success of the Clinton years, they were actually only recovering the Reagan-Bush destruction. You know, they were just recovering the economy, recovering lost rights, recovering workers, attacks, things like that. They don't actually progress. So that's one thing that they can do here. They could put us back literally in the 18th century.
Well, and so what are some of the things that the Advancement Project and Reverend Barbara getting together on, and what do they want us to do who are sitting out here looking for something to do?
So there is the protest that we are supporting. People need to be aware that this is, as your guest mentioned, a travesty. It's a growing crisis. There's some urgency, and we have to stand up and not sit down. So we need to use some of the tactics and the techniques that worked in the past to draw more public attention to this issue, and then look at the legislation that has received the attention, not just the negative ones with the mandatory restricted photo ID that was passed, but look at the Ella Baker Voter Empowerment Act, a way to lift up and to increase opportunities for people to participate in our democracy. We're working with Reverend Barber to come up with creative and unique legal and policy analyses and strategies, and to provide the strategic communication support so that people across the state will become aware of different ways to fight back. I think that the fact that you have this opportunity for people to speak out is so helpful, and we just need to make sure the communities are really talking about this issue and coming up with ways to make sure that everybody is informed that in the state people are trying to make it harder for them to vote.
Well, the thing that really gets me is that they think that all they have to do is build a wall high enough, electrify it, put barbed wire on it, put a moat around it, put sharks in it and alligators in it so they can't come across the borders from the south or from the north or from the east or from the west. And the thing is that I was speaking to Senator Malcolm Graham yesterday. They think that that's going to stop them from losing ground. They're going to lose ground because all the American citizens that were born here from illegal aliens are citizens and will be turning 18 in 4 or 5 years. So they've
right.
already lost the battle. They've already yeah. lost it.
Yeah, you're so right. And there's so many opportunities now for us to grow together as a very diverse nation. Dr. King used to always talk about having that iron foot of oppression on the neck of black people kept white people from being able to move, because as long as you're on my neck, you can't take any step away. So you could be moving forward and growing, but instead you're trying to keep down people who could help you to expand your opportunities in the state.
Well, I thought the NAACP student chapters made a bold statement, and the look of it was so startling with the tape on the mouth, with the protests they've been doing. I would like to see more of this active protest and more in your face against the Republicans and call them out. Don't let it go.
Yeah.
Stop it now while it's getting.
Before we stick it to the Republicans, we have to heal ourselves, and most of us are Democrats, and we have to heal ourselves. We're eating our own here. I mean, I was attacked. I was actually assaulted at the convention 2 weeks ago, and I have a meeting scheduled for Thursday, and I'm fearing for my safety and the safety of others in there. When the jeers and the screams came up when I recessed that convention, I looked around the room, and it was white people that stood up and said some really nasty things that I can handle. But, I mean, that's the vitriol that I'm dealing with on the local level. And as we all know, all politics is local. And I shouldn't feel that. I feel like I am fighting my grandparents' battles all over again.
Yeah.
The Reverend talked about the resurgence of stuff. That's exactly what it is. They're bringing all of that type of stuff back. I mean, my mom was a chief administrator for Shirley Chisholm's campaign. I have a picture of myself in a stroller with buttons all over it. My dad was a war hero in the Korean War and a union official in New York City. So I come from people who serve, and I come from people who know that the only bad thing is not doing anything.
There you go.
And so I truly believe that we have to look into these little pockets like Union County. I mean, many people have moved because of the craziness in these counties. But these are the places where the power is held by those who don't want to open their hand to others. And it's keeping everything, it's like a concentration of mud that won't let the water through. And I know it's going to happen, but how many of us have to be hurt? How many women have to be hurt? Look at what happened to Jamie Hahn a few weeks ago, 4 days after my convention. She's stabbed by another Democrat and killed. These are very important things, and it needs immediate investigation, and these organizations that are supposed to be able to stop things from happening because of the numbers of membership, because of the political and community power, the NAACP, the Black Leadership Corps, these are the entities that I think that I should be able to go to and say, listen, this is what's happening to me.
Right.
And I need your assistance.
The freedom to think and to talk should be fear. It shouldn't be threat. And it shouldn't be that you literally fear for your life when you walk in there. That's insane.
Right. Yeah, I certainly agree, and the pursuit of happiness goes along with the fundamental right to vote. It goes along with quality education, all of the other issues. Certainly, your security and your freedom to speak out and organize is so important. And I wish, Brother Lawson, I could stay on longer because I'm being inspired by what I hear. And you can count on Advancement Project to continue to support the work of the good people in North Carolina.
Very good. I appreciate your time. And
all right.
You take care of them.
All right. You do the same. You all take good care. Good to hear your voices. All
thank
right.
You.
Take
Michael,
care. Sure. Thank
you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Michael, I need to run because Joe and I, Joe has is going to be a speaker at a Purple Hearts dinner here down the Speedway. So we need to get going. But it was great talking to you again. Diane, you keep the faith. You hold it together, girl. And you know you can always call me if you need anything. I will be there for you.
Thank you. And the same going to you. If you need any help to campaign for your position, which I truly, truly will pray that you achieve, because it will make things so much better for us, and we'll be able to move forward as our state chair wants us to.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Then we can send the other chair back to becoming a Republican.
there you go. Your lips to God's ears. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, so I was glad that we had a full house here today. I was glad we had the chance to get Reverend Hales, that he was so busy, he was going to call in at one time, but they got tied up, and I never sent him the calling number. It was me. So,
what else is new?
We've had so much information, we haven't been able to cram
it. We're on information overload. As a matter of fact, I had to do a special yesterday because we had so much information to get out. We had so many people that want to come on. And, I'd like people to call in, but, you know, a lot of times when people call in, they call in and they get you off the subject matter that you want to keep going on. And so I'd rather have the guest, whoever the guest is, do the talking, because that's how you really find out who the guest is.
Right. And
that's
you know what?
True.
I love hearing these